Hey everyone, this is Casual Fanatic.
Film reviews without the shoes.
I'm Luca, your casual viewer.
And I'm Cayman, your fanatic. How are you feeling today, Luca?
Hey Cayman, I am feeling pretty good. You know, it's been a good week so far. I had a stressful work day, I would say, but, you know, it ended up being good. It was like my first test of me knowing what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And my architect that I was working under wanting me to fake it. And I felt that was wrong. And I asked a few of my coworkers, and they were like, well, you know, I can't tell you what you should do, but
fake what?
It's okay. So there's like this curtain wall.
Yeah.
That wasn't supposed to be a curtain wall. And she wanted me to fake the look to make it an eaves wall with like a sweep going through it, basically. Yeah. Like as if you carve, you know, right, lines out of it. But it was a curtain wall where they had mullions.
All right.
As a grid system to make it look like the mullions were, you know, the recessed area.
Right.
And I didn't want to do that. It was incorrect. One, and two, it was making life way harder than it needed to be, as if I just like just correct it. Right. And I told her that too. I was like, look, it would be just way better and easier if I just modeled it and I did it the correct way. And she was like, okay. And then she was like, wait, no, just do it this way. It's easier. And it turned out to be not easier. And so I called her. And I was telling her the whole time, like, this, it's just not right. I don't want to do it. I literally told her I don't want to do it if it's going to be wrong and faked.
Wow.
And then I explained to her why. And she was like, okay, well, do it your way. And I was like, okay. And so then she messaged me after the day. She was like, hey, the wall looks really good. Good job.
Nice.
So yeah, that was my day. Contemplating how to argue with an architect that I was working under.
On a happier note, what are we talking about today, Luca?
Today, we are talking about a movie called Tick, Tick, Boom.
Indeed. It came out just last year on Netflix and is or was directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who most of our listeners might recognize as the person who created Hamilton.
I didn't know that.
Well, there you go.
That makes sense. Now I understand.
Yeah. So... this the movie is based on a play that was written by Jonathan Larson, who is the main character. And so this is basically like a film adaptation of a stage musical.
Okay. Is this based on a true story, by the way?
Well, they mention that in the beginning of the movie, actually, is that I don't remember exactly what it says, but it's like, everything you're about to see is true except the parts that Jonathan made up.
Okay.
Because this isn't like...
I remember seeing that. But.
The film isn't based on like a bunch of research into the life of Jonathan Larson. It's based on a play that Jonathan Larson wrote about his own life. So like if he made something up in his musical, then the movie is going to reflect that.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So they give everyone a basic understanding, because I know, unfortunately, this movie did not get a lot of press, especially because the Jonathan Larson in this movie is played by Andrew Garfield. And during pretty much the entire time leading up to its release on Netflix, everyone was too busy talking about Andrew Garfield being in the new Spider-Man movie. So
it sucks sometimes for a lot of movies where they like overlap, you know.
Yeah.
And just one gets a, you know, all the popularity at a time.
Yeah. But yeah, so the basic story is Jonathan Larson, who wrote the very successful play Rent, which I don't know if you've ever seen Rent. I have not seen Rent, but I know that I know it's very popular. Sure.
I don't think so. Probably not. Most likely not. But I've heard the name.
But way before he wrote Rent, he wrote another play. And then the play even though it got a lot of critical praise, no one liked it enough to produce it.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so after his first play failed, then he wrote another play called Tick, Tick, Boom, which was about the failure of his first play.
Hmm. But also set in like future tense, right? Like aliens and shit, right?
No, that's like that's the play that failed.
Oh, I'm totally tripping. I thought Tick, Tick, Boom also failed. And the one that he wrote after Tick, Tick, Boom was a success.
It's honestly a little confusing. This is like a movie based on a play about a different play.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We'll have to get into that, you know, in the spoiler section.
Usually I'd go into the box office numbers, but seeing as how this movie was released on Netflix, don't really have any of that information.
Yeah.
But let's talk about general thoughts. How did you feel about Tick, Tick, Boom?
You know, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. I think that I'll just, you know, state some super general things. Quite honestly, like there wasn't for me too much negatives that I found, like too many negatives or that popped out at me at least.
Yeah.
I thought the camera work was fantastic. I love the lighting of the camera. So, you know, that already makes or breaks a movie for me, especially if like it's this type of, I feel like the lighting has to match the type of movie it is. And I feel, it matched the mood perfectly, in my opinion. I feel like the acting was really good from all the actors.
I agree.
And I love the singing. The singing was also great.
Yeah. I think, and just to speak on it a little more is I know because the structure of the movie is like it's very in and out where you see like there are it cuts back and forth and you see like scenes of Andrew Garfield as Jonathan Larson. He's like on stage with a piano and like narrating, and then while he's narrating then it goes like into the actual movie. And I feel like it took me a while to figure out what was going on, and I know it was a little confusing for Elena as well because we were like, is this part of what's actually happening or is this like outside of what's happening? You know?
Yeah.
I liked this movie a lot. I think there is something that didn't quite vibe with me.
What was that?
Although the singing I thought was very good, I was not super impressed with any of the songs. They were just kind of so-so to me.
Really? I mean, I feel like that's the kind of vibe that play was trying to give off. No,
I don't know, but
I feel like it was kind of like, it was like his just like so-so attitude about life and about his failures and successes.
I mean, maybe, but like, I don't know. I feel like everyone treated him like he was some sort of musical genius and like,
I mean, his friend. Yeah. There was
the scene in the the conference room when they were like, doing the word association exercise or whatever. And they're like, oh my God, you're amazing. And I was just like, I don't know. I feel like for how smart they made him seem, the songs that he were right that, and like these songs were actually written by Jonathan Larson. And I just like, I don't know. It wasn't for me.
I totally understand that.
Would you like to get into our game?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, let's play. Is it fresh or is it rotten? Guess the percentage of positive reviews out of all the reviews this movie has gotten.
I'll jump straight into it.
Go for it.
I think that this movie gets an 87. And my reasoning for that is I feel that a lot of other people wanted to see more maybe action. And I feel like it was too slow in some parts for some reason, or like just too confusing, like we were saying at the start. Okay. I feel like if it would have been like a little bit better chronologically written, I could give it a higher score, but since, you know, here and there I was a little bit lost, like was Tick, Tick, Boom the you know famous one that got written, or was it the one after, which I guess we'll get into, but yeah, I think 87 is a fair review. And to be honest, after this movie, I was super pumped about it. So I'm glad I got time to like sit and think about it for a while. Because my, like, at first I was like, that was like fantastic, great movie, great film, great, you know, videography. But then I thought about it and, you know, that's where it led me.
All right. Well, our fresh review comes from Jeff Nelson from Showbiz Cheat Sheet. Jeff says, "It is a beautiful portrait, only elevated with a career best performance from Garfield and a tender portrayal from DeJesus. However, Tick Tick Boom keeps up Hollywood's frequent use of dipping into gay trauma porn as LGBTQ story representation."
Very interesting analogy.
Our rotten review comes from Steven Silver from Tilt Magazine. Steven says, "While it has occasionally fantastic elements, it is a huge mess. Its narrative is muddled and needlessly complex, while the musical numbers swing dramatically between brilliant and absolutely cringeworthy."
Damn, that guy did not like the movie at all. Sheesh, okay. I can't really relate with any of those. Like, I can't relate with the positive or the negative review. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, the tomato meter score for Tick Tick Boom is 87%.
Holy, wait, what did I say? Did I say 87?
You said 87.
I did. Oh my God, let's go. And Cayman, I'm being honest with you, bro, 100%. I never look at the reviews, ever. This is the second time I got it right.
Would you like to double or nothing and try and guess the audience score?
All right, audience score, let's see. I think the audience might actually go lower, maybe an 83.
Okay.
I'm locking it in.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and say it then. The audience score is 96%.
Damn, fuck, I should have, dang it. 96 is exactly what I was at before I had time to think about it. Damn, okay.
Yeah, you got the critic score right, though.
I got the critic one right. Fuck. Well, should we get into the spoiler section?
I think first we should go ahead and take a quick break. Get a quick message from our sponsor.
Let's do it. Yeah. Alrighty, well, I hope you guys enjoyed the beautiful ad that we had running for you. So,
humans and aliens, dogs and cats, this is the spoiler section. If you don't want it to be spoiled, don't listen.
Meow, meow, meow.
Gorgeous.
I had to talk to both, you know, humans, aliens, dogs, and cats.
Well, you know, when I start getting emails from all of our dog and cat listeners, I'll let you know.
Yeah, please let me know. And, you know, also the aliens. You can't forget about the aliens.
You know, I don't speak alien, so.
Yeah, they're probably just going to send the regular English to you.
We'll see.
Anyway.
I'll be real with you. I did not take a whole lot of notes on this one.
Okay, that's perfect. I did. Kind of
perfect. Well,
but like super shallow notes, you know.
I mean, that's fine. I remember it well enough that I'll have things to add. But I think I'm gonna let you take the lead on this one because I have like four notes.
Okay, to get, like start off with it, like I said earlier, I thought the camera work was fantastic. I thought there was great music right to start off. Like the start of the movie was just like them randomly like getting into an interpretive dance about whatever they're doing, right? Like. At one point he was like in the library and he needed money. And then they started singing about like him being broke and them needing money. And that mood, that vibe that they carried all throughout the movie of just randomly fucking breaking into song with what it could be over you dropping a pencil. Right. That reminded me of choir 100%. So weird. I mean, really like people doing this and like being crazy and just like, dancing and like starting to sing like randomly like that, it's real. I've been in that mood. I've been in that like group of people, and I that's maybe why I connected with the movie a bit at the start and throughout the whole thing, because like the interpretive dance with the story behind it was awesome. And like you said, when it breaks into there like being a song and dance happening, but then him narrating over the song and dance, I thought that was like fantastic layering of all the different aspects that humans can communicate in. of speech, of song, and of dance.
Did you also connect with the way that they portrayed that creativity never really happens where you need it to?
Yeah. It's so true.
Talking about how like he spent like 6 hours writing a song about like salt or something, but
yeah, salt and pepper or something.
But like that. couldn't manage to write a song for his musical.
Yeah, yeah. The most important scene he was spending days over. And I feel like it's real, you know, like it's almost as if like spurts of you wanting to do something, right? Sometimes you're just lazy and you know you need to do something, but you don't want to.
Right, then all of a sudden you're like editing this podcast.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes you really like want to do it, really want to get into it. And I feel like that's with every hobby, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't want to do anything. And sometimes I'm like super fucking into it. And the same thing happens with creativity.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I feel like architecture was a great medium, because when you have that creativity, you can bring it forth. But if you don't have it, then you can do the technical side of things. Yeah. So, but yeah, I feel like I highly connected with that, because it's happened to me before when I was supposed to be doing something or writing a song or, you know, memorizing my voice parts. Sometimes it's harder than other days, and that's just life in general.
Yeah. I definitely connect with the like general sense of the creative mind, but I was never in choir, and I feel like I can sing, and people that have heard me sing are like, oh my god, you're a good singer, but like I don't like singing, because I know this is a thing that like a lot of people have to like train themselves out of, but I deep inside my soul hate the sound of my singing voice.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. So like the only time
all of our listeners sing for us right now.
I won't do it. The only time I'll sing out loud is if the music I'm listening to is louder than the sound of my voice, so I can't hear myself.
I get that. I think you and I have sung together though in the car or something.
I mean, it's possible. Sometimes if you catch me in a good mood, but
I mean, I feel like also if you're with someone else that's singing, it makes it a lot better.
Yeah.
You know? I totally get that. I totally get that for sure. I guess we both connect in like a different way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I wrote also here like that the parties that they were having of like them drinking and then like one guy like just starting to dance with someone else and like saying,
yeah,
that those are choir parties. I mean, hands down, those are choir and theater parties.
That guy who said, he was like, yeah, I don't really like choir. I just joined for the pussy.
I mean, you know, that's fine. That's fine.
And then everyone started singing choir. And he was like, whoa, that was good.
Yeah. Dude, a lot of people that I've like talked to joined choir just because they heard either, you know, fun people are there or they're good parties. They don't really care about the music. And I'm like, I'm in it for the music. And then, you know, the party's just going to happen. Yeah. Because everyone, you know, if you're with a group of people that can be goofy and you're just loose around and you guys can sing together, which I feel like you said, it's one of the forms of what's it called when you're being fragile or you kind of like open up to someone. I feel like a singing voice does that, you know?
I will say I had said earlier that I didn't really like the songs that much, but the song that they sang during the party, the Bohemia one, I really enjoyed that song.
Caught yourself head bopping a little bit.
But that was the only one, unfortunately.
Did you not like tear up at any parts in the movie?
No, not really. I mean, I did. I could feel the emotion for sure.
Wow, you're heartless. That's crazy.
No, I felt it. It just like it wasn't enough to push me to tears.
Oh my god! Yeah, you're heartless, Kaylin. I don't know, man.
Because
did Elena cry?
She got close a couple times. Yeah, I think she like maybe she had a secret tear here or there.
There's no fucking way she cried during the Godzilla and the butterfly scene, but they shouldn't cry during this movie.
it was mostly just like all of the like, oh, my friends are dying of AIDS stuff. That was the most emotional parts.
Yeah, that was really sad.
But even then, it's just like, because while it was going on, Elaine and I were like talking about how intense everything was, like when the AIDS epidemic first was like everywhere and people were making a big deal about it. And like, you see that in the movie as well, as like, no matter where you go, there's like all over like posters on the sides of buildings. And like, you go into a doctor's office and there's a huge thing on the wall that's like talking about AIDS and people being very aggressive towards homosexuals because they were like thinking that they somehow caused this disease.
Yeah. Yeah.
We started talking about how crazy all of that stuff is, and like the fact that all of that stuff like happened not very long ago. And so because we were talking about all of the AIDS stuff, we didn't really have, I guess, the time to like soak in the emotional part of that part of the story.
Okay. Yeah. You kind of got sidetracked. They didn't suck you in all the way. I mean, for me, I was, it was a cold day. It was snowing out and I was cuddled up in my bed. It wasn't actually in the morning and I was hungover. And then I started watching this movie and it hit a lot different than it probably would have if I was like, you know, afternoon with a buddy, you know, I was like alone. Yeah. In a vulnerable, sad state. I wasn't sad or anything, but like the movie made me sad, you know.
I gotta say, I've never watched a movie with a hangover, so.
I mean, you should do it, you know. It's an experience. Do it all alone, cuddled up in bed, and then watch a movie that's like sad, bro. It hits different. So I mean, the movie was a great, I feel like, emotional driver for me. And one thing that I feel like I really connected with was the fact that the characters, the two main characters, I don't know their names.
Jonathan Larson
and his best friend.
And his best friend is, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. I have it pulled up here. The character's name is Michael.
Michael. Okay. I knew it was like a manly-ish name.
So Jonathan Larson, Michael is his best friend and Susan is his girlfriend.
Okay. Yeah, well, I feel like one reason that I kind of got like really engulfed in it is because of the relationship of these two best friends reminds me of mine with one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And he's gay. And so he has to deal with like all the precautions of, you know, obviously AIDS and STDs. Well, then again, I guess everyone does. Yeah. But I don't know, like the relationship that he had of like him being in the world of possibly being broke your whole life kind of thing. Like he doesn't have they never have steady jobs. It's always on one thing to the next kind of thing. And he's an operatic singer. I mean, he's still in college. Don't get me wrong. He's still in his master's, but even afterwards, you know, and then I went into industry. So like his friend, they both were poor together at one point, which me and my friend were once too. Mm-hmm. And now I'm, you know, still poor, but not less poor. And he's still poor. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I felt the direction that they were going of like me now calling it my hobby singing and him calling hobby, like what was once both of our like loves, him, it is still his love and his like number one thing. And for me, it's like a side thing. Right.
Yeah.
And so I connected with that. I was like, man, like, fuck, that hurt, you know, of like, why would you give it up? You know, like, well, he really did like fall into the money trap, but like,
yeah, well, you know. I mean, like, made a good point, is like he was passionate about it but not in the same way, and like that's not necessarily a bad thing. People have different passions, and
yeah,
especially for someone in Michael's situation, who we find out towards the end of the movie it did end up testing positive for HIV, but he's like, listen, man, I gotta make the most of my life and spending all day freaking out trying to be part of a musical, that ain't it.
Right. Yeah. And I understood that. And that's like one of the things that I contemplated too at the start of like my career, because I actually wanted to go into, I think being a teacher, music major basically.
Yeah.
I didn't know exactly at that point how far I was going to go with that, but you know, and then I changed my mind because, you know, I didn't think it would support me that well.
Which, you know, that was my same thought process. I also, because I had so much fun in the 7 years of middle school and high school band. And I was like, I could keep playing my instrument in college, but like, I know if I'm being honest with myself, I don't have the kind of musical talent to like be super successful as a trombone player. And so then it would be one of those things where I'm just like old group of people that like go down to their community center and play music every weekend. And then maybe right. every once in a while you get invited to like the freaking orchestra hall, like downtown. And you're like, ooh, big fancy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just gig money. Like you're not really, there's not a career to be made there.
Right. Yeah. Because
as a musician, 90% of your time is practicing and no one pays you to practice. They pay you to perform.
Yeah. And that's why like a lot of the times musicians are either high or drunk. I know for choir people, they were the craziest, most drunken people I've ever met. And they smoked also a lot of weed usually, but crazy stuff. Anyway.
I thought this movie was, one of the things that I did take note of was this movie was very fast paced. I feel like there wasn't really ever any downtime, which I honestly can't tell if that's a good thing or not. It the movie felt very fast. Like things just kept happening, you know? It says, it was an hour and 55 minutes, almost 2 hours. And I feel like it felt like maybe an hour and a half. Like,
yeah, it was very action packed, but at the same time, it was slow though. I don't know. I feel like it was like a lot of things were happening, like a lot of different scenes, but that doesn't mean the scenes had a lot of stuff in them, you know?
Yeah. But just like it kept moving, which is like very interesting because a lot of the movie was just like Jonathan sitting in his room trying to figure things out. And like, all of the background noise of people like talking to him like, oh, you should do this. Oh, you should do this. Oh, what about this thing and that thing? And he's like, everyone shut up. I'm trying to write this musical. And it feels like if you actually think about it, like not a whole lot of stuff happened in the movie, but the way that it was put together made it feel like there was constantly things going on.
True. Yeah. And I feel like us being now adults, we also felt the pressure. Right? Like maybe that's also why it felt so packed, is because we always felt his pressure.
Yeah.
Like even the scenes where you just heard like the clock ticking, like tick, tick, tick. That's fucking stressful. And if you're watching a movie and this guy's always stressed, you're stressed. And you know how it happens when you're stressed, time passes pretty fucking fast.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's why.
That could be.
Yeah. The movie was just stressful, man. It was emotional and stressful and I can't take it.
But it wasn't stressful in a bad way.
No. Yeah, don't get me wrong, viewers. It was stressful like in a good way though.
It was just like it was very easy to empathize with the stress of the characters.
Right. And the partying of the characters, but like still knowing you have shit to do kind of thing.
Yeah. I really loved like you said, the cinematography, the lighting, all of that. Like, I feel like for me, this felt like the best mixture I have seen of like a perfect blend between film and a stage show, you know? Like, felt like everything, every scene felt like it could be put on stage. Like there wasn't anything like super fantastical. All of the, even like the sets, like almost felt kind of like stage sets, but they were like just slightly fancier. So they like fit into, cause like obviously on stage, everything has to be kind of two dimensional because everything has to be facing the audience.
Yeah.
But this, like it had that same sort of feeling, but in a three dimensional way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I think the camera placements helped with that too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Like even the diner, right? Like at first, it did feel the whole time like a real diner. And then at one point in the mid of the movie, like the outside wall, like falls down and they like reveal like it's a set and how it was put together. And I was like, that is so fucking cool.
Yeah. The diner scene was pretty cool.
I also thought, now that we're talking about like scenes, I thought it was hilarious. I didn't love it. I thought it was hilarious when he had like his first review or like a flashback of his first review, or like a midterm review, where there were those two judges, right? And one of them was the big dog, like
Stephen
super,
Sondheim.
Yes, him. And then the other guy was just some dude that was always like saying something, and then Stephen Sondheim would say something different, and then he'd be like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say, just differently, differently, you know, that differently.
That was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like, it's like, I thought that scene was great. He would
Elena
say like,
hated that.
Really? Oh, I loved it. I
She's
thought
like,
it was
oh my gosh, this guy is so stupid. I'm like, I know, it's hilarious.
Exactly. Like, you know who that reminded me of? And I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast.
We're I mean, saying just, the same thing, just differently.
Just differently. Or like a yes man. Like, I hate yes men. Like, please have your own opinion and stick to it. And if you want to change it, have a good conversation about it. And then at one point you can change it. Yeah. But like, don't do that in front of people just to make yourself look good. Like, there's no point.
Speaking of Stephen Sondheim, the actor who played him, Bradley Whitford, I thought, first of all, did an amazing job. Mm-hmm. Perfectly pulled off the like calm gravitas of like a big shot music producer person, you know?
Totally agree. Yeah, yeah.
Like, he wasn't full of himself, and like I don't know practically anything about real life Stephen Sondheim, but the way that he was portrayed in this movie made him feel like the kind of person that you would want to have as a mentor.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Like, very cool, calm, collected, but like very intelligent, and he right. won't like look down on you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, he's a thinker rather than like a talker.
And like, he's not going to like both. Make a big deal about it or anything. And like, even yeah. like at the end when he like came in and sat in the back corner to watch the musical.
Although like the front seat
yeah.
was like reserved for him kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, very well played. I mean, you really got that feeling from him, like you said.
But it's even more outstanding, which just goes to show, is because Bradley Whitford also played, do you remember in Godzilla King of the Monsters, there was that scientist that I said I got super frustrated every single time he was on screen?
Yeah,
same actor.
Oh wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. What? Yep. Okay. Well, that just means he was a good actor. You already know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I hope that came across in what I said during that episode, because I don't think that Bradley Whitford is a bad actor. I just like despised that character, and it mm-hmm. just so happened that he was the one who played him. But he did an amazing job in this movie, and
you loved him,
and I loved him.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. I didn't know that. That's a very nice like sequence of different of the same actor, different parts.
Yeah,
totally different parts. I mean, one being like super intellectual and smart, the other guy being just a talker, annoying kind of thing.
Yeah,
super cool. I wrote on here, I loved how they walked through a scene and layered it with him talking, like the dinner scene. And I think I mentioned that earlier, where, you know, they layered talking, singing, and, you know, dancing, all that onto one another while he was narrating it.
And we had mentioned this back at the beginning of the episode, but the parts where he's narrating, like, that is from Tick Tick Boom, like his musical Tick Tick Boom, like that, the scenes where it's just like him and the piano and the backup singers, mm-hmm. like that is how that musical was intended to be performed by him.
Okay.
I think like originally even it was like meant to be like a one man show, and it was just going to be like him and his piano. And then later on it like turned into, we can add a couple more people here for like backup vocals and music and stuff.
Right. Right.
But like that is directly like we're seeing the scenes of him narrating is us watching the play Tick Tick Boom.
And that's so cool. Like I would have thought it to be the reverse, right?
Yeah.
Like the narration parts are the parts of the movie that are like infill to the tick tick boom play, but it's actually the reverse, to where all the action parts that we see, like all the character development, is actually the part that's helping the play tick tick boom turn into a movie. Very cool. I also, one of the parts where he was like narrating, which I at the end realized was actually like part of, like you said, tick tick boom the play, was the old school rap video. And it was like him rapping it at one part, but then like the music video had like that African-American, like old school kind of like hip hop vibe.
Yeah, I don't know if that was like, I didn't recognize that person. I don't know if it was like someone actually involved in hip hop or if it was just,
I don't think so,
an actor.
I think it was just an actor, because at one part it was like them casting, right? And they were like, oh, you're going to be perfect for this.
Yeah.
Kind of racist, but you know. Not
And you see at the end, like right before the credits, they show like real clips of actual Jonathan Larson, and you like see him working in the diner and him on stage. That's good.
I was super sad when I found out that he actually died and didn't get to see his play like take action.
Yeah, he died sad. I want to say like the night before Rent had its first performance.
And he died of like what, a heart vessel bursting or cataract?
I'm trying to remember the official term. I think it was like a aortic embolism or something like that.
Embolism, yeah. Something blew up.
Or aneurysm, embolism or aneurysm. I don't know. Something in his heart just like popped.
Can't imagine. I was super sad when I heard about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, going from sad to super funny, I only wrote down one quote in this movie, and this was it. Everyone's unhappy in New York. That's what New York is. I thought that was fucking hilarious because, one, my sister lives in New York, and I'm like, that's how people see New York, like actual, like everyone's just unhappy living in it because it's supposed to be like this great place to live.
Yeah.
But everyone's actually like, that's like what New York is. Just a ton of unhappy people crammed together trying to make life. I thought that was great. I love that.
Yeah, I think it is like, I don't know. I feel like in any big city like that, like because you're just around so many people all the time, it's hard to give off happy vibes, you know?
Yeah, I feel like you compare yourself a lot then too.
Yeah, I feel like it's not necessarily that everyone is miserable all the time, but like,
no one wants to be happy for always because you're always around people. Yeah.
No one wants to put too much energy, effort to seem happy all the time. So you just keep your happiness inside.
Yeah. Keep it to yourself. And then when you see your friends, then you can show it. But other than that, you're just going to be a brick wall.
Yeah.
And I've seen it every time you go into a subway, everyone's just a fucking dead pillow. I thought also that the brainstorming session, like you mentioned earlier, I thought that was kind of fucking funny. I don't know why.
It was funny, but it was like funny in such a dumb way.
Exactly. Like just like these super, to paint the scene for anyone that maybe hasn't seen it, it's like these super business people and then him, the creative guru in the group.
Yeah.
And he like just lists like the super simple idea to most people that, and they're like, oh my God, like basically getting down on their knees, sucking his dick the whole time. Like, that's kind of how I felt the whole time. I was like, and he's like, I could make a living doing this. Like
what? Literally, I think like one of the other people in the focus group, like, cause she was the person running. It was like, all right, just like throw out whatever words you think of, and we'll see if we can like fit it into this. And one of the other focus group people was like sunrise. And then Jonathan was like, the dawn of a new day, and everyone's like,
oh my God, yes. And then one of them was like to use the same example, like sunrise. And then the lady, like one of them said sunrise, and then one of the other ladies goes, the rising sun. And he goes, you said the same thing just backwards. And she goes, well, I flipped it. Like, that's creativity right there for her. Oh, I loved it. It was just so dumb and corny, but it really, I don't know, it added something to it.
Do you remember the thing that when they actually got to the item that they were trying to sell, it was like some whack ass thing that was like definitely just going to kill like, everyone.
And he was like, what the fuck? You're literally just trying to trick people with like these, like the ads, you know, like that's what their job is basically. And then he at the end, he like kind of gave him the middle finger.
Yeah.
And I forgot what he named it at the end, but it was something really funny.
Me either.
Like something about losing, it was like a losing fat product.
But yeah, it was good. I think, like I said earlier, I didn't get the sense of genius that I felt like the movie wanted me to. It felt like everyone was like, oh my God, Jonathan Larson is amazing. But then it was just everyone saying that he is amazing without, the movie didn't give me anything to prove to me that he's amazing.
Right. And I think low-key, like, I think that was meant to be. Because a lot of the time, like, I have a lot of friends that, you know, are good. And that's the way you support them. You're like, oh my God, you're so good. Like, keep going. And all of that, you know?
But, like, even but people then, that weren't his friends were saying he was amazing.
Who? Like, who?
Well, Stephen Sondheim, for one.
Right. But I feel like his criticism was... because he saw something in him. It wasn't saying that he was amazing. You know what I'm saying?
I guess.
It's like you can see talent in people and try to nurture it and hopefully lead them in the right way. And I think also that's what that agent lady was doing. Although she ghosted him at one point.
She ghosted him for a long ass time.
Yeah. I think she was just trying to lead him in like the proper way because they see something in him. Not saying that he's a musical genius.
Yeah.
But I feel like even with like, some of my best friends, like I see something in them and I can tell that they have it, but they're just not there yet. But you don't want to be like, you're not there yet. Like you're not good. You tell them they're the best and then they'll keep going. And then at one point reach it, you know?
I don't know, man.
And that's how I felt like the movie. And maybe that's why I connected with it because that's friendship 101. You want your friends to succeed. And so you cake them up a bit, right? You're honest with them. Like you got to start writing the new one, you know?
Yeah.
But also you're talented, so keep going, please. Yeah.
Okay. That's understandable.
Yeah. That's kind of how I saw it. Like the whole thing was like them just trying to like push him and like move him into like the direction that they hope that he can go into it. Like he can succeed in, I don't know.
I mean, also, I guess if you think about it, because Tick, Tick, Boom was written by Jonathan Larson, like, I don't know how much of what was in the play got put into this movie, like word for word. And yeah. I have no idea about the adaptation process that was put in, but I would imagine if someone is writing a musical about themselves, they're going to make themselves sound better than how it actually probably happened. You know,
you think so? I think the exact opposite. I think they would make themselves look like such dog shit. That then when they finally did it, it'd be like amazing.
If someone, I think if someone had, because he said he spent what, like 9 years trying to work on that other play.
More than that.
Yeah. If you had spent a decade of your life working on something and then it failed, and then you like go back later and you're like, I'm going to write a musical about how that other musical failed. I don't know. It felt like one of those things where you're like, well, I did great and my musical was great, but nobody liked it.
Interesting. I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I didn't understand it like that.
I don't know.
I feel like people always play themselves down.
I think like, he played himself down a little bit because like you obviously see like the tension with like especially between him and Susan, with like her having this new job that means she would have to move away and like.
Him just not even paying attention to
that. Yeah, it didn't really like hold back on him completely ignoring the shit out of her.
Right.
But
I feel like that's almost worse than anything else.
No, and that's what I feel like in the personal moments with like all of the stuff that happened between him and Susan and all of the stuff that happened between him and Michael, the stuff with his friends and the people that he knew, that stuff felt more genuine and like he wasn't like he felt like a normal person, like he wasn't perfect. But then all the parts of the movie that had to do with his musical, then it made him seem better than I think he probably is or was.
Interesting. Okay.
which is, I mean, fine. That's,
we don't know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No idea.
I don't know that. And even if it is true, that's not like a problem. Like, of course.
Right. Right.
Like, music was, like we were talking about, like that was his sole passion. Like, of course, if he's that into music, he's going to write about the musical part of his life differently than he writes about the friendship part of his life.
That's so true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could tell that music meant more to him at one point than friendships. So yeah. Good point. Let's see here. Do I have anything else? The part where he is trying to brainstorm for like this last song. And it's just like this one element that stuck out to me was when he went swimming and he dove underneath. And you know, when you dive in, like you're in a lap pool, you have like these lines so you can kind of go in a straight line. And how
in real, I've never swam in a lap pool.
Oh, yeah. The lines are basically like so you don't like steer yourself into the
other people
buoys. Yeah. But when he looked down there and then he like saw the lines turning into like a music staff and then he saw the music. I thought that was so creative.
Yeah.
In a way of like him brainstorming while he's singing, like he couldn't think of anything to do because his best friend was mad at him. His girlfriend may have just broken up with him and all he could think about was he has to go swimming. And then he goes swimming and boom, it hits you in like the weirdest random time.
Getting distracted by the girl drying herself off on the side of the pool.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. But then all of a sudden it was like, there it is. And he like dove down to the bottom of the pool and like touched them. And I thought that was magical. I don't know.
That was nice.
And then
it almost reminded me a little bit of, because just like a few weeks ago, Elaine and I finished watching Queen's Gambit, which is also on Netflix. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Have you seen that?
I haven't, but I tried to watch it. Mm-hmm. It's a show, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to watch it. I think I got to episode 2 and then I didn't. Okay. I don't know. It didn't hook me as much as I thought it would.
I'll tell you this. Once the show gets past the orphanage, it gets much better. I didn't really like any of the orphanage stuff either.
Okay.
But the main character in Queen's Gambit, she has this thing where she'll like look up at the ceiling and then like there's like shadows from like the window or something. And then the shadows on the ceiling like morph into a chessboard. And then she like will imagine chess games playing out on the ceiling. And that's how she like learns new chess moves and stuff like that.
Sick.
And so like that's kind of what that scene felt like in the pool. Just like having random normal everyday patterns sort of turn into something that means more to you.
Yeah. Very cool. That's a good comparison. Yeah.
I mean, I'm all out of notes. So
I am too. I was literally the last two things that I wrote down here. Well, I'll just summarize the last a few important things. To me, the whole movie, because we were just talking about creativity, it was a great insight into an artist's mind, right?
For sure.
Because they always think that they're like failures. They're not going to succeed, but they are always trying because they know they have something, they have a passion. And I feel like even like an artist, any type of artist, right? Has some kind of doubt in their mind that they need to battle out. And I saw that in this movie. I was extremely sad that he passed away. That really caught me off guard. I wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
And then that it was a heartwarming movie. And then it's crazy that he dies and then Tick, Tick, Boom. And the other ones, whatever it was you said, became famous and like big. I don't know. It's just, it's interesting to see that people always value something or someone more when they're gone.
Yeah.
And I have that with like daily things, like something that like might not even mean anything, right? But right when you lose it, it means the world. And then you find it and you're all better again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But hey, I think overall, great film. I feel like it was very interactive as in like you were always, it was always going, like you said.
Yeah, it was always going and going. I felt it like it was, especially for people that are in a creative field or have a creative hobby, even like it's very easy to sort of connect with what's happening in this movie.
So true. So true. Yeah.
Like I said earlier, unfortunately, just like the actual music didn't connect with me as much, but the story was great and I did enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
Well, let's get on to trivia.
Trivia.
So believe it or not, Andrew Garfield, who played Jonathan Larson, had no professional singing experience before the film and dedicated a whole year to training his voice.
Wow. That's awesome. Now, I won't say he was a good singer, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was passable. It was confident.
Yeah, it was confident. It was confident.
And I liked it. It wasn't like...
I feel like that was a typical director's voice, you know? Like, you hear it, like, you can kind of sing it, sure, but you're not, like, professionally trained for that, you know?
Yeah, because, like, just because you can create music doesn't necessarily mean you can perform music, and just because you can perform music doesn't necessarily mean you can create it.
Yeah.
Second fact here is that Stephen Sondheim was revealed by friends to be an idol and mentor to Jonathan Larson and actually helped Lin-Manuel Miranda during production of this movie. Hello, man. And there's Elena making a bunch of noise.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck was that?
I'm out of breath.
Golly, dude. Where were we?
Right, so Stephen Sondheim helped Lin-Manuel Miranda during the production of this movie. But unfortunately, Mr. Sondheim passed away on November 26th, just a few days after this movie released on Netflix.
Dude, that's so, oh my gosh. That's like weirdly, like almost correlating.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he lived a great long life.
Very productive life for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one last one here, which is also about Stephen Sondheim, which is that Miranda said about the final voicemail, you remember at the end of the scene where he's like really like not feeling good because nobody sent him any money, and then he gets the voicemail. It's like, hey, listen, I think you did really good and you're going places and things like that, you know?
Let's just chat.
Yeah.
Let's meet up somewhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Lin-Manuel Miranda said, I was in contact with Steve throughout. I showed him the pages. I showed him Steve's dialogue. And when I showed him the finished film, he said, you treated me gently and royally, for which I am grateful. And then he wrote me and said, but the last phone message to John, the language feels a little trite. I don't know, like, I don't feel like I would ever really say that. Can I rewrite it? And Miranda said, a rewrite from Stephen Sondheim. Should I accept that? Or he said there was only one problem, which was that Bradley Whitford, who was playing Stephen Sondheim in the movie, had already wrapped his work on the project and was unavailable to re-record the message. So Sondheim offered to record the new version himself, and it is actually his voice that the audience hears in the final cut.
No fucking way. That is cool. Oh, I wish I would have known that during the movie. I would have paid so much more attention to that one part.
Miranda said, it makes me weep to even think about it because he was such a mentor to John and generations of songwriters. But yes, he rewrote that message and recorded it himself and just sent it to me.
Wow. That's beautiful. Was that all the trivia you've got?
Yeah, all the those are the best ones.
Okay, what about trash facts? Hit me with one at least. Oh,
you need some trash facts?
I need some trash facts.
All right, let me get you some trash facts here. I don't know. I don't know if any of these are necessarily trash.
Super trash. So
they're just like kind of boring. This one says this is Andrew Garfield's debut on Netflix, which I don't see why that's really important, but I guess this is the first time he's been on a Netflix project.
Cool. Nice. Good for him.
But yeah,
that was
that's
good.
What we got.
Yeah. I like ending with trash facts. Sometimes they're just so let down, you know?
Yeah. <It's> just...
But yeah, I think definitely go watch it. I feel like it's a good one to watch with someone or alone. It depends on how you want to feel during it.
Well, if you watch it alone, make sure you drink a lot the night before so you can watch it the night before.
Yeah, and make sure it's snowing outside and it's fucking cold as shit inside.
Bro, I'm literally, even just sitting here right now, my toes are so cold.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the movie yet, check it out. And if you have seen us, and if you have seen it.
If you haven't seen us.
if you have seen it, let us know what you thought about it. We'd love to hear/read. I mean, I guess like if you wanted to leave us a voice message, I don't know if you can do that on Twitter, but you can like record something and link it in an email.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah.
Guys, please, please email us. Again, I will say this probably every podcast. Do not tell us in person. Do not message us. Do not do anything like that. Just.
Oh,
like,
we're just going to ignore you. Yeah. If you tell us in person. Fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. No, I'll just keep telling you. Like it happened today, actually. I said, well, we have an email and a Twitter that you can tweet at us if you have any suggestions. I had to keep repeating it because these people were telling me suggestions or, you know, what they want. And I was like, please don't tell me.
Speaking of, actually, the reason that we did this movie today was based off of a suggestion that we got in an email.
Oh, okay. Wait, really? Nice. Nice. Yeah, I didn't know that.
So shout out. Got this movie recommendation from a Mr. Vincent Lee.
Oh, Mr. Vincent Lee. Thank you, Mr. Vincent Lee.
Vincent said, hi guys, first I want to say that I'm a huge fan of y'all. Continue to do what y'all are doing. As a fan, I did want to hear your opinions on some movies I'm thinking of watching or have watched. Here is a small list, and Tick Tick Boom was on that list, and you may hear beautiful some other movies from that list in the future, so stay tuned.
Guys, if you want to be like Mr. Vincent Lee, guys, tweet at us. Yo, shout out to Vincent. I appreciate you, dude. Love you much. He is, to let the other people know, he's one of my best friends, but I did not know what he was sending or what he sent. So this is total surprise. Thank you much to him. And thank you for, you know, telling the podcast, not telling me. Thank you.
Thanks, Vincent.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, bro.
Yeah. So if you have any thoughts about the movie, you can send us an email or, you know, you can type it, send us a voice message, like I said earlier. You can send that to casualfanaticpod@gmail.com, or you can message us on Twitter @cashfanpod. This has been Casual Fanatic. Thanks for listening.